the song of the desert sirens. Athena had set him on his path, but, as usual, had not even hinted at how he might overcome the sirens. He assumed she trusted him to figure it out for himself. Or, if his cleverness was unequal to the challenge, he could always rely on his native savagery and the blades of chaos. Odysseus had stopped up the ears of his crew with beeswax, while he remained chained to the mast of his ship. Kratos had nothing that would block the insistent, seductive sound. Even at this distance, he felt his heart quickening and his body responding to their call. If he succumbed, he would be their dinner. As he walked along, Kratos clapped his hands over his ears, hoping to muffle their insidious song. That failed. He found himself walking faster, hunting through the sandstorm for the creatures, wanting them as he had never wanted another before. The heavy flapping of wings caused him to look upward. Through the dust clouds he saw a harpy struggling to carry a dangling body in its claws. The monster veered and disappeared in the storm, but Kratos knew it took the body to the sirens. Once, on a battlefield outside Sparta, he had come across two sirens and had ordered his men to fill them full of arrows. The sirens had been dining on the dead of both sides, greedily gobbling up human flesh and smearing the blood all over themselves. Their death cries had cost him three expert archers. As the sirens had died, they screeched at such a pitch that the men's heads exploded. Kratos had ordered the sirens' carcasses to be carved into pieces so small that even crows would ignore them and then be flung to the four winds so that the monster's shades would wander forever restless upon the earth. He pressed his palms harder against his ears. The sirens' song grew ever more enticing. The wind slackened, and their evil song lifted and filled him with irresistible lust. Soon he stared across a sandy dune marked with wavy ripples from the wind. Beyond lay the ruins of an ancient temple, perhaps where the sirens made their home. And then he saw them, four tall, spectral creatures floating about the plaza before the ruined temple. The sirens' seductive sound turned Kratos weak. Sheer sexual allure pulled him forward like a shade in Hades shuffling toward Charon's boat. Every move he made was slow, unsteady, and increasingly uncoordinated. One of the sirens had seen him now. Drawn by his mortal blood, she turned toward him, and her part in their song rose. Kratos tried to draw his swords, but found he could not. The blades of chaos were never meant for creatures so lovely. The siren who'd seen him slithered down the slope, her face unbearably beautiful as she smiled. The sharp yellow teeth that rimmed her gaping maw didn't bother him in the slightest. Lovely. She was so lovely, and she became more so as she neared. "Come to me, lover. I want you as much as you want me," her voice carried the siren's song. Kratos knew the song for what it was, knew it sang the melody of his doom, but still he could not resist. With a mighty exertion of will, he forced one hand back to his shoulder, fingers brushing the hilt of one blade. The siren didn't flinch. She knew well the power of her vile song. "There is no need, lover. Come to me and love me. I love you. I want to feel you in my embrace." His resistance faded as he went to the most beautiful woman in the world. His arms wrapped around her as he pulled her close. Kratos jerked as he felt a bite. "A love bite, my dearest," came her cooing words. "You like it. You want me to give you more, many more." He felt blood running down his chest from the neck wound. But he knew she loved him, and he desired her above all others. Even above Aphrodite's twin daughters, even more than Laura and... He pulled back, struggling in the warm embrace of a woman he treasured. "No," he said. "I can't." His ears filled with song, shrill at first, and then so melodious that he wept. His lover sang for him. She sang a haunting song of love and desire for him and him alone. "Another love peck," she said. Again he recoiled as blood spewed from the other side of his neck. Blood. Blood spilled in battle, not in a lover's tryst. He straightened his arms and shoved hard. The siren let out a screech of pure rage, momentarily breaking the spell. Kratos saw the siren for what she was, and then she sang to him, sang a melody so lovely and beguiling he knew she wanted him above all others in the world. "But she is not my wife. My wife and daughter." Those memories hammered at Kratos' mind even as he felt more love bites. The pain offset the pleasure. He had known pain, so much pain, and he concentrated on it. And his wife. And his daughter lying dead at his feet. Again he pushed away. But this time he heard other voices.
"Share, you are greedy. Hungry, we're all hungry. You must give him to us."
The voices turned strident, and the lovely, loving melody faded in his ears. "My wife! My daughter!" Kratos lifted his hand and felt energy flow. The thunderbolt of Zeus built. But against his lover, his lovely, caring lover, he couldn't. Not this way. The cacophony of demands to dine on his flesh grew as the siren's song diminished. Kratos reached down deep within. The visions, the nightmares, powering his determination. The thunderbolt erupted from his palm. A force, greater than anything he had ever felt, lifted him from his feet and threw him high in the air, spinning, turning, and tumbling. He crashed into the sand, dazed. When he looked up, he saw sirens scattered about, lifeless. He shook himself and stood, aware that he had destroyed only a few of the creatures with the power of Zeus. Three other sirens rushed toward him. Kratos had never seen creatures so lovely or loving, but he did not fall under their spell. Within a moment he understood why. The sirens had begun to fight over him. His hand went to his neck and found fresh bite marks, all bleeding freely. His nightmarish vision had allowed him to break their spell to fight, and when he had blown them apart with Zeus's lightning, the thunder had partially deafened him. He might not have the beeswax that Odysseus carried, but he had a makeshift method of temporarily blocking the siren's call. His hearing was already returning, though had he waited too long? He raised his right hand again, but his body betrayed him. His hand trembled, rebellious flesh refusing to grasp the lightning. The siren soothed and cajoled him to relax, not to use his weapon. They loved him. He wanted them more than he'd ever wanted anything. A final twist of his will curled his fingers into the proper form, but his weakened arm could no longer hold his hand upraised. It fell to his side, and the thunderbolt in his grip blasted the sand in front of him to glass. The thunderclap and shockwave staggered him, two steps back, three. He launched another thunderbolt. Again came the blast. But this time he could barely hear it. "Well, all right, then," he did not hear himself say. He set out toward the desert monsters at a walk, with purpose, but without haste. The sirens drifted back from him, exchanging glances that seemed to cry, "How can this mortal resist our power?" Suddenly the sirens were uncertain that Kratos was human at all. They howled at him, pitching their voices in various harmonics. One chord could set a man afire, another could blind him, still a third could cause his skull to explode like a chestnut in a bonfire. Kratos kept walking. He didn't even bother to draw the blades. The sirens spread out as though to encircle him. But Kratos had dealt with sirens before, and these sirens, to their misfortune, had never dealt with Kratos. They had never seen Kratos move faster than a walk, and they had no idea just how swiftly those powerful legs could drive his massive body. He allowed them to close in around him until he judged they were near enough. Then, in a blindingly swift uncoiling of his mighty thighs, he sprang at one of the sirens the way a tiger pounces on a goat. With one great hand, he seized the siren's long, flowing hair, while with the other he punched her in the chest so hard that her sternum and clavicle shattered and ripped the upper part of her spine out her back. He wrenched off her head and swung it by its hair like a flail. The nearer of the remaining two took her sister's head squarely in the face, hard enough to shatter every monstrous bone in her skull and drop her dead on the sand. The last siren turned to flee, but Kratos whipped the remains of the first siren's head around his own and hurled it like a throwing hammer. The severed head struck the fleeing siren between the shoulder blades, hard enough to shatter her spine. Splinters of bone shredded her lungs, which put a stop to her hideous, keening cry. Kratos stood over the dying siren for a moment, with nothing resembling pity on his face. He crushed her head with a stomp of his sandal. He hurried up the steps into the raised structure. Oddly, though the place appeared to be a ruin, the stairways and corridors were all lined with burning lamps, so he had not the slightest difficulty seeing his way. He followed the light, and eventually burst out into daylight again on a balcony of dizzying height, looking upon the endless sandstorm raging across the desert of lost souls. Kratos paused to examine crude reliefs carved on the walls to either side. One depicted gods appearing before Paphos Verdes III, commanding him to build a mighty temple to house the greatest weapon on Earth or Olympus. The other showed the temple being chained to the back of Kronos, a disrespectful way for Zeus to treat his own father, even if Kronos had tried to eat Zeus as soon as the future king was born. Chained to the stone at the far lip of the balcony stood a horn, larger than Kratos's whole body. Curious carvings raked backward along the length of the horn. Precious jewels rimmed its far end. Heavy chains fastened the horn into place at the edge of the balcony. Kratos went to the smaller end of the great horn, put his lips to it, and blew. A mighty blast roared from the horn's opposite end, harrowing apart the swirling desert sands before Kratos, and somehow holding them at bay to open a path before him. Far in the distance along this path, he glimpsed another structure, a grander and more curious one. As he squinted at it, trying to make out details, that mighty temple began to move toward him. Kratos sucked in his breath as he saw Kronos arch and cause the Temple of Pandora, chained to his back, to shake and rumble. Then the Titan, on hands and knees, turned and passed close to the edge of the balcony where Kratos watched. Kratos had no time to think. He reacted. A heavy chain dangling from the Titan's side swept past. With a powerful leap, Kratos launched himself into the air. His fingers closed about the chain, and then he was whipped about as Kronos changed direction and plunged back into the depths of the Sea of Sand. 16. Hands bloodied and aching, Kratos finally reached the top of the Titan's mountainous side. For 3 long days he had climbed, and for the whole of the most recent day he had no longer been scaling Kronos's hide, but instead chipping his way up the mountain chained to Kronos's back. He had lashed himself to the Titan's side and slept fitfully several times, but on the long, long rock climb he had pushed upward without true rest. Worse was the lack of food and water as he worked ever higher on the vast Titan. When he had begun, Kratos thought the Titan moved slowly, but the higher he climbed on the side, the more he realized that Kronos sped along. Even though he crawled on hands and knees, each motion was so huge that the wind of his passage had very nearly stripped Kratos from his side more than once. Kratos's blast on the horn had summoned from the depths of the desert of lost souls this great mountain of a Titan, his immortal face worn by time and sand into smooth curves of eternal sadness. A mountain nearly as tall again rested on the mighty Kronos's back. At its uppermost lip, Kratos crawled up and over to find himself face to face with an enormous vulture, who was happily ripping an eye from the corpse of a dead soldier. Kratos frowned. What was that soldier doing here? Kratos stood to get an idea of the landscape. The mountain's height would have let him see leagues away, if not for the permanent swirl of sandstorm in the desert of lost souls. But he was more interested in what lay near at hand. Not far away rose huge but plain sandstone blocks and a crude bronze and wooden gate at the front of the magnificent temple. The walls could have been solid gold, and the plaza paved with diamonds for all Kratos cared. Kratos was indifferent to wealth. He would secure what the temple had been constructed to defend, and be on his way. Kratos reacted instinctively when a harpy described a long sweeping arc through the skies overhead. He drew the blades of chaos and set himself to fight, but the winged creature completed its curve toward the temple. He jogged forward. Kratos watched warily as harpies flocked around the Temple of Pandora like bats around a bell tower. Below them, on some sort of broad stone deck, an immense bonfire burned, and the smoke that twisted upward from it was greasy and black. A shift in the wind brought it to Kratos's nose, and he knew the smell. The fuel for this fire was human corpses. Scaling the last few feet proved too much for him. He had to spend considerable time searching before he found some stone blocks that could be fashioned into a crude stair. After scrambling up to a level place, Kratos discovered that what burned here was not a funeral pyre, but instead was contained within a huge fireball of bronze and stone whose rim was twice Kratos's height. As Kratos approached, the harsh scream of a harpy drew his eyes skyward, in time to see the hideous she-creature open her talons and let drop another corpse, another soldier, it seemed. Bronze armor glinted briefly in the afternoon sun, then clashed like cymbals when its bearer hit the bowl.
"That'll be you one day, and sooner rather than later would be my bet."
Kratos spun, and the blades found his hands. Limping toward him, using a long staff as a crutch, came some sort of undead, too decrepit to even wield a sword or scythe. Its head was mostly exposed skull, one arm ended in a splintery stub of bone, and its right leg was gone below the knee. The one side of its ribcage that was exposed to Kratos's sight did seem to house internal organs, leathery lungs and a black heart, which pulsed as slowly as the creature stepped. The staff on which it supported itself was fire-blackened and charred at one end. Kratos scowled at him. He didn't know how to deal with an undead that wasn't trying to kill him, let alone one that could actually speak.
"What are you?"
"Once I was a soldier. Now,"
it jerked its head toward the fireball,
"I look after this."
From above came fierce flapping as a harpy circled and released another body to impact in the huge bowl. The eye within the skull socket seemed to flicker like the flames in the bowl above.
"Everybody around here ends up in the fire. Except for me."
"Everybody?" Kratos asked with a frown. "There are others?"
"Still alive? Probably not. But you never know. I have come a considerable distance." "And you're no closer to your goal." "Not really. Zeus hid Pandora's box in this wretched temple so no mortal could ever claim its power. And yet, year after year, I open the gate for more and more seekers and shove more and more bodies into the fire."
With another screech, a new harpy appeared. The winged monster dropped a fresh-looking body that missed the center of the bowl, ending up draped over the rim. Rather than descend to rectify its mistake, it merely shrieked in annoyance before flapping hard and flying off. It caught an updraft from the sun-heated stone of the mountain and circled skyward before disappearing above the summit of the temple. The firekeeper spat a black gob, then said,
"Here, give me a hand with this."
It led Kratos over to the bowl and handed the Spartan its staff, leaning his nub of arm bone against the searing bowl for balance.
"Poke that bugger in for me, will ya?"
Kratos used the staff to shove the corpse into the bowl, reflecting that at least he'd figured out why the staff was charred at one end.
"You said you open the gate."
"It opens at my command."
"Then do it." "In my own time, Spartan. You think you can conquer the Temple of the Gods? It's never been done, you know. Sooner or later the Harpies will bring what's left of you back for me to burn. If I were you, I'd leave now." "I will leave," Kratos said, "when I have the box."
"And luck to you on that,"
the decrepit undead chuckled.
"You want water? Food? Armor? There's not much, but take what you will."
"Why?"
"Why give you supplies?"
One bony shoulder lifted in a shrug.
"Why not? It's not like I have any use for them myself."
With a nub of arm bone, it pointed toward its guts, or rather to the ragged gap where his stomach, liver, and bowels ought to be.
"Bloody vultures got my innards decades ago."
"Where's the food?"
"Over there," the decrepit creature said. "I robbed the bodies."
"Of what? For what?"
"Whatever they've got. For fun, mostly. It's the only interesting part of my job. Never quite know what you'll find."
Kratos hefted a half-empty water skin. The water inside smelled like goat.
"Drink up," the creature said. "And here's some decent meat. Hardly any maggots at all. I got it off a body only a day back. Or was it 2? 5? You lose track of the days out here. One's pretty much like the next, and both today and tomorrow are like all the ones before."
Kratos drank of the water and ate what he could. The worms tasted better than the meat they infested. He licked what little grease there was off his fingers and wished for more. He drank the last of the water in the skin. The undead seemed not to mind. Why should he? Then he donned bronze armor from the pile. When Kratos had finished, he frowned at his host.
"I can see your curiosity, eh? You want to know my story. Questions, questions, it's always the same," the firekeeper said. "Madmen seeking power. Fools seeking glory, I know. Too well, I know. As you can see by what's left of me,"
it indicated its maimed form,
"I was no luckier than the rest of them. Unluckier, really. At least they got their burning and their souls released to the Lord of the Underworld. I got this."
It swung its staff about, showing the area filled with the pilfered possessions and the huge fireball.
"You attempted to conquer the temple?"
"That I did, and I'm sorry for it now. I was the first mortal to enter the temple, and so I was the first to die. As punishment for my presumption, Zeus doomed me to tend this corpse fire for all eternity, or until Pandora's box is taken. Which is close enough to eternity, for no man will ever gain the box."
The creature nodded toward the towering gates and gave out a whistling sigh.
"The architect, he who built this temple, was a zealot. He lived only to serve the gods, and for that he got the same reward we all do, an eternity of madness. The tale is that he's still alive. Still inside, still trying to appease the gods who abandoned him centuries ago."
Kratos stepped closer and stared into the fire, where bodies sizzled and popped.
"I see your question. How many bodies a day do I burn? Go on, you can ask. I tried counting for the first few years, that is. I gave up after the 10th year. 5 a day? 12? I know your questions, I do, since I've heard them all before. Did everyone slay desert sirens and sound the horn to get here?
Did I?
Kratos grunted, looked past the remnant of a man, and studied the gates for a way to open them. If he could not, he might scale the walls beside the bronzen wood gates. But he recognized the danger in that, with the harpies fluttering around above, eyeing him hungrily.
"You shouldn't think so much," the firekeeper said. "It'll only make you crazy." "Well, then you're here, so you must already be crazy."
The way it laughed warned Kratos of something more.
"You're right to question me. I know what happened to you because you didn't question the gods."
A fist of dread clenched in Kratos's guts. He fixed his gaze on the firekeeper.
"I know you are the ghost of Sparta."
The empty eye socket glimmered as though the undead stared at him intently.
"I know why your skin is white as ash."
Kratos lurched forward and seized the firekeeper by the throat.
"Your job is difficult for a creature missing a hand and a foot. Imagine how difficult it will be when you're missing your head."
"You'll have no luck entering the temple if that gate stays closed."
Kratos's grip didn't impede the creature's mocking speech.
"Think it over, ghost of Sparta. Can you risk mindlessly serving your lust for blood? After what happened last time?"
With a wordless snarl of frustration, Kratos cast the firekeeper to the ground. Chuckling, the creature rose and hopped over to grab a skull from the ground. With speed and accuracy, astonishing for such a broken creature, the firekeeper hurled the skull at an outcropping above. It shattered against the stone, its impact disturbing a pair of harpies. They fluttered down toward some sort of mechanism at the top of the massive gate. Kratos could not see what they did, but soon the gate began to lift slowly, as one harpy on each side flapped frantically to lift with all her might. The gates ratcheted upward and locked in place.
"See you soon, ghost of Sparta," the firekeeper cried. "I'll see you again when the harpies drop you in my bowl."
Kratos strode through the gate without a backward glance. 17. The book lay open before a massive door like the eye of a god, its upper arch decorated with arcane symbols. The book itself seemed to be only a statue, a replica, carved from stone to look like a book on a pedestal. No real book could have survived exposure to the desert of lost souls, open for 1,000 years. Its nature was irrelevant. All the import was conveyed by the words graven into its stone pages. This temple was constructed in the honor of and at the command of the mighty Lord Zeus. Only the bravest hero shall solve its puzzles and survive its dangers. One man will receive ultimate power. All others shall meet their doom. Pathos Verdes III, chief architect and loyal subject of the gods. Kratos scowled as he read the graven words. The architect had actually designed the Temple of Pandora deliberately to be solved by the bravest hero? Kratos snorted in disgust. He was no hero, having committed the bloody murders he had. But he would not meet his doom here. His hatred for Ares and the promise of the gods to erase his nightmares would carry him to victory. Kratos spun about when the great temple door slammed behind him. There was no going back, even if he had wanted to. He looked around and saw that the only way forward was through a portal carved with more of the curious symbols. At cardinal points around the circular doorway were large gemstones, dull and lifeless, in spite of the sunlight slanting down from behind them. Kratos placed a hand on one huge stone that might have been a diamond. He felt it quiver, and drew back his hand. Spinning, drawing the blades of chaos, he faced a 10-foot-tall, heavily armored undead. Kratos crossed his blades above his head to fend off a powerful downward strike by the undead's massive sword. The blow was so hard that it drove Kratos to his knees. Rather than force his way back to his feet, Kratos suddenly released the pressure on his blades and rolled forward between the undead's legs. As he whirled under, he knocked it down by grabbing its skeletal ankles. The undead soldier toppled forward, giving Kratos the opening he needed. He came to his feet and slashed with all his strength. Two things happened, one expected, and the other surprising. The undead's head exploded from its neck, as he'd intended. The diamond Kratos had touched on the doorway began to glow. He stepped over his fallen adversary and pressed his calloused hand to the now illuminated, flame-hot diamond. He reached up and brushed his hand over the next jewel, still coldly inert. He quickly found himself engaged with the cyclops that materialized behind him. The fight was fierce, but Kratos dispatched the one-eyed horror with a feint to the leg that caused the cyclops to bend low. The blade in Kratos's left hand speared deep through the single orb, causing eye goo and brains to gush out. The stone in the door now glowed a bright ruby red. "So," Kratos said, smiling grimly, "this is the key to your doorway, architect. Blood." He quickly touched the remaining two gems, producing two fighters. Knowing the secret of the portal allowed him to waste no effort sending the monsters to Hades, where they belonged. The two remaining gems, one peridot, gleaming greenish-yellow, and the other a blazing sapphire blue, sent lightning arcing around the circular portal. Slowly the doorway into the Temple of Pandora opened to him. Kratos entered a long, curving corridor lined with doors on both sides. Here two wall-mounted braziers burned with cheery flame. They could be magical, apparently everything here was to some degree or other, but they certainly wouldn't have been the work of the architect. There was absolutely no reason to illuminate the interior if one wanted to keep intruders out. Everything would be doubly challenging in the kind of inky blackness the stone-shrouded interior would otherwise be, and anyone attempting to reach Pandora's box would have to do it before his lamp oil ran out. Then Kratos laughed harshly. The architect undoubtedly thought the sight of the monsters awaiting anyone who would come into this maze would unnerve them, add to their fear, make their deaths all the more certain, as terror froze their arms and loosened their bowels. The Temple of Pandora was not only about keeping out those who sought the box. It would be designed to inspire gut-churning fear in those who dared come this far. More than once Ares had told Kratos that the purpose of war was not to kill your enemy, but to kill him after breaking his spirit. He looked to either side, calculating the curve. If this corridor formed a ring, it would be very large. His first order of business was to investigate the lay of the land, because apparently any part of this structure could, without warning, become a battlefield. He trotted around the circle, and when he returned to his starting point, he discovered that the great circular door through which he had entered had closed, sealed to his best effort to open it again. Kratos ignored this. Retreat was not in his fiber. Win or die, the way it had always been. He found an open archway as he continued around the ring, one that hadn't been open a moment ago when he'd first passed. The view along the hallway open before him looked promising. Every few yards, giant spiked walls slammed against one another with enough force to shake the stone floor on which he stood. Reasoning that the architect had gone to so much trouble to discourage intruders along this particular path made it a likely place to start his quest. Timing a succession of dashes took him through the corridor without so much as a scratch. Kratos stopped to look back. He had passed the first test within Pandora's temple. How many more to come? Many. He stepped into a wide area, the walls carved with the mysterious symbols he had seen outside. Kratos ignored them because he faced a chamber full of monsters. Reaching back, he drew the blades of chaos, and with a toss sent them to the limits of their chains. A quick spin sent the fierce-edged weapons in a sweeping circle of destruction around him, catching two of the undead legionnaires unaware. He cut off their legs and toppled them to the floor so they could not continue the fight. The others rushing forward were not so easily vanquished. Kratos drew in his weapons and began the methodical destruction of his enemies. His skill, his experience, and the towering anger he felt toward Ares powered his thrusts, enhanced his slashes, and brought him to the far side of the chamber with only a few scrapes. He faced an archway that appeared harmless, but he approached warily, then stepped away, blades in hand, when a low-pitched humming filled the room. He looked around the room and noticed a circular portal that had begun to glow with pure white light. The archway at the side of the chamber was now filled with the image, traced in living fire, of the face of a goddess. Not as voluptuous as Aphrodite, nor so severe as Athena, this goddess had a curious innocence to her, a sort of eternal golden adolescence. This could only be one goddess. Kratos inclined his head out of true respect.
Lady Artemis.
Kratos, the gods demand more of you. Kratos just nodded. The gods always demanded more. Much depends on your skill, said the Huntress of Olympus. You have learned to use the Blades of Chaos well, but they alone will not carry you to the end of your task. I offer you the very blade I used to slay a Titan. Take this gift and use it to complete your quest. Kratos reached out, and the sword appeared in his hands. It was a huge, unwieldy weapon, longer than Kratos was tall, and not shaped like any honest Spartan sword. Its broadly curved blade was wider than the span of his hand, jutting out beyond the haft, more like the kopesh favored by the heathen Egyptians.
Thank you, Lady Artemis.
Go with the gods, Kratos, the image of Artemis said. Go forth in the name of Olympus. With that, the huntress vanished, leaving only the open archway leading deeper into the temple. Artemis's blade cool in his hand, he approached the archway. Some glyphs were letters he could read, but most were strange, alien, and beyond his ability to decipher. If only he could read them, he might get some hint as to the challenges he faced before reaching them. He peered into the room beyond the arch and saw no one. It was nothing more than a foyer, such as he had seen leading to many a king's audience chamber. The trappings were richly appointed, but he had claimed more elegant furniture, statues, and tapestries as the spoils of war for the glory of Sparta. A staircase provided the only way forward. As Kratos climbed, he noticed that the walls narrowed until at the top of the stairs his broad shoulders brushed the rough stone. The narrowing continued down a corridor until he came out on a platform, high above a room filled with rotating gears and distant screams of agony. The dim light afforded him a good look only at the gigantic creature blocking his way to a catwalk across the room. The giant roared its wordless challenge and charged. A heavy sledge that replaced its left hand smashed down hard, shaking the catwalk and threatening its structure. The blades of chaos came easily to Kratos' hands, but he found that his opponent was as wily as it was strong. His usual attacks, weaken the creature, then ram his blade down its throat, were not going to work. The giant agilely avoided even his quickest thrust and slash, and forced Kratos to dance back to avoid the heavy hammer blows. Any hit with that crashing hammer would mean death, but worse, the creature seemed inclined to destroy the catwalk and prevent Kratos' crossing.
"By the gods, you are different," Kratos said.
He thought a spark of intelligence showed in the eyes buried under bony brows. Great intelligence. Then it attacked, using its right hand to strike at Kratos' eyes as diversion for the sweeping attack from the hammer. A simple move to the side allowed the fist to pass by harmlessly, but this was not the creature's intent. It delivered a more subtle attack. The haft of the hammer blocked Kratos' weapons, allowing it to step closer still. It tried to grapple with Kratos, but succeeded only in a potent headbutt. A fraction of an inch closer and it would have caught his eye. Responding the only way he could, Kratos hammered at the monster's powerful, sloping shoulders with both pommels of his blades. The creature danced away more lightly than any spawn of Hades Kratos had ever faced. They circled, each studying the other for weaknesses and how best to attack. The blood trickled down Kratos's cheek as a reminder that this monster considered its assault carefully and was a skilled opponent, but it had never faced the ghost of Sparta before. Kratos roared and rushed forward, pressing the giant back a step, then changed the direction of his attack, dropping flat to the platform and kicking out. One bronze greave smashed into the creature's knee, unbalancing it. Kratos worked his other foot behind the leg and swept around hard, further staggering it. Not content with this, Kratos spun about so his feet tangled his foe's legs, and then it was time to end the battle. Off balance and facing away from Kratos, the creature tottered on the edge of the platform. Swinging a blade out on the end of its chain, Kratos felt the Hades-forged weapon crash into the exposed back and send the giant forward, into space. It roared all the way to the distant floor, where its cries ended suddenly with a huge crash. Kratos looked over the edge of the platform and felt no victory. The hammer-swinging giant had been a worthy opponent, but nothing more. It had been only an impediment to finding Pandora's box. Kratos looked across the narrow catwalk and then began to walk on it. The walk was hardly wider than his sandals, and the drop to the floor where the monster's body lay had to be 100 feet, but he never faltered. Confident strides took him to an island in the middle of the room, where a lever had been locked into place. Studying the area, Kratos saw that his only hope for getting to another entryway in the chamber wall some 50 feet under him was to reach a cable strung from one side to the other. A jump might allow him to grab the cable as he fell, but if his hand slipped or he misjudged his trajectory off this isle of safety, his fate would be sealed. There was nothing below the cable for him to seize, if he missed it. Another path suggested itself to him. He followed the mechanism controlled by the lever and saw how it dropped a huge weight to the floor below. That descent would unwind a chain and give him a safer way down to the cable, although it would be at the far end of that stretched line, requiring him to work his way hand over hand to the portal. He never hesitated. He took off the securing line on the lever and yanked hard, setting the massive gears and pulleys into motion. The huge weight lowered from above. As the weight passed, Kratos jumped and grabbed the chain holding it. For a moment he swayed, because his added mass disturbed the mechanism as it unwound the chain and lowered the iron block. But he found himself ready when the weight flashed past the cable. He gathered his legs under him and made a powerful leap, hands outstretched. Success! He gripped the heavy cable and caused only a slight sagging from his added weight. Kratos began working hand over hand toward the far side of the chamber. He kept his goal in sight to avoid looking downward at the gears clacking and clashing underneath. A slip and he would be ground up and sent to Hades in tiny pieces. Working swiftly, he'd reached the midpoint along the cable when he felt it sag more than it had only seconds before. Like some arboreal creature in its element, he reversed his direction and looked behind along the length of the cable he had already traversed. One hand left the cable as he reached for the blades of chaos. Following him along the aerial pathway were two grasping, chittering monsters with saliva-dripping fangs and an ability to swing and move that he could never match. Kratos considered severing the cable, which would send the far half crashing into the distant wall, while the half he clung to would swing forward so he could climb to the portal when he hit the wall. Such was not to be. The monsters swarmed forward, climbing over each other in their haste to kill him. Taloned fingers swiped at him, forcing him to recoil. Bringing up his feet to kick out held them at bay for only an instant. As he swung back down, they came at him. His grip on the cable firm, he dared to swing his blade. It struck at an awkward angle and did little damage to the first creature. Long, deep scratches appeared on his sword arm as talons raked him. Worse than the pain that threatened to cause him to abandon the use of his sword was the second creature's attack, swarming over the first along the cable. It went not for his sword arm, but for the hand holding the cable. It snapped savage fangs and caught a finger, almost severing the digit from his hand. Kratos roared in anger and let the bloodlust he had known for 10 full years rise to take control. He caught the second creature between his thighs, twisted, and pulled it away from its hold on the cable. He swung away and simply released his vice grip, sending the creature plunging to the distant floor. But it never struck. Its body was tossed high on a spinning gear wheel, then caught and minced in the ponderous mechanism that seemed to have no purpose other than to grind out death. The creature's companion made the fatal mistake of watching the death below. With one hand on the cable, Kratos released his hold on his blade and grabbed. His fingers closed around an exposed neck. Tendons stood out on his forearms as he squeezed the life from the creature. But he did not stop when all movement ceased. His blood from the deep scratches ran down his hand and onto the flesh of the dead monster, tainting it. Only when Kratos was satisfied that he had marked the creature forever in Hades with his blood, did he send it tumbling after the other to be dismembered in the gears below. Kratos swung back and gripped the cable, only to have his fingers slip and almost cause him to crash to his death. The blood from the cuts and scratches had turned his fingers slippery. His strength remained, but the cable might as well have been oiled for all the traction he now had on it. His right hand came free, leaving him dangling precariously. Even as he wiped off his hand, he knew this would not work. More blood oozed from his wounds to again slicken it. Kratos doubled up and swung his heels over the top of the cable, locking them to give more support. He had no way of staunching the blood leaking out of his bone-white flesh, but keeping his ankles locked above the cable prevented him from following his enemies to the floor beneath. Dangling upside down, he pulled himself along the cable as quickly as he could, finally reaching the end of the line. A quick twist allowed him to clutch an outcropping under the portal. He wiped his hands one at a time to clean them of blood, and then pulled himself up to the ledge. Standing, he faced a short corridor. Stride long, Kratos went to see if he had finally reached Pandora's box. In only a few minutes, he realized that he hadn't. 18.
"I know that sword," Zeus murmured as he looked into the scrying pool. "That blade is one of the most powerful weapons in all creation. How did you trick Artemis into giving it to Kratos?"
"Trick her, father? I?" Athena shook her head. "She and Ares have reached a kind of truce, but she has seen his vicious rampage of insanity firsthand. She did not relinquish the sword lightly. I believe that she wishes to show her support by helping Kratos through the temple."
"I've seen my son's bloodlust as well," Zeus muttered darkly. "He has burned most of Athens to the ground. Only a few buildings remain around the main square, and only the temples atop the Acropolis stand. Even your Parthenon has been blackened with soot from the fires, and is falling into disrepair.
Most of your shrines are gone. He kills your worshippers just as he singles out mine for his brutal murders."
"War is always messy," Zeus said. "Ares has again refused to attend me and explain why he attacks my followers so aggressively, though. It is one thing to burn Athens to the ground, another to flaunt it in such a fashion that it offends me. Unless," Zeus said, turning thoughtful, "his passion for war has turned into a cancer burning away at his brain."
"He wants it for his own." With her usual focus and determination, Athena steered the conversation back onto her course. "And Kratos, father? Will he receive your favor?" Zeus was uncharacteristically slow in responding. He did not look at her directly, but studied her reflection in the scrying pool.
"I am curious, beloved daughter. I have watched you go to considerable lengths to support and protect your pet Spartan.
He is the last hope of Athens."
"Really? And yet, when you intercede with me, with the other gods as well, you never seek help for your worshippers or your city. Only your priests. You say that Kratos is their hope, and you seem to be his. But wouldn't your powers of persuasion and manipulation be better spent entreating direct aid? Hephaestus, for example, might have extinguished all those fires with a single wave of his hand. Apollo might have healed your wounded. I myself..."
"Yes, father, I know.
You have the right of it. As always, you see more deeply than any other. Athena took a deep breath and decided, in this extremity, that her cause would now finally be best served by the straight truth. My lord father, Ares's true target is not me, nor is it my city. Zeus looked at her, his thoughts veiled behind an expressionless face. Father, his target is your throne.
So your goal, all along, the final truth of your endgame, has been solely to protect me?
Forgive my presumption, Athena said. I only fear that you might allow your well-known fondness for your children to cloud your judgment of Ares.
Or perhaps that my well-known fondness for my children might also cloud my judgment of you.
Zeus still showed no emotion, but Athena had heard just a hint of concern at the way Ares destroyed the shrines to Zeus throughout Athens.
You seek only to save me from myself, because I have forgotten the lessons of my own life?
All Olympus would welcome Ares's death.
Would they? Or do they huddle to one side, hoping to gather whatever scraps of power remain after an Olympian patricide?
You condemned your own father to crawl on hands and knees through the desert of lost souls for all time, rather than kill him, after you won the Titanomachy, Athena said. Because you know too well the consequences of family slaying family, you have decreed such will never come to pass between Olympians. But Ares may have in mind a fate similar to that of Cronos for you, father. An eternity of torment bound by unbreakable chains. And that is only if he can overcome his own madness enough to show self-restraint.
And how long have you known Ares's ambition? How long have you been planning your brother's death, using Kratos as your instrument of destruction?
Again Athena told the simple truth. Since the day that my brother tricked Kratos and drove him into my village temple in his blood frenzy. It was then I knew that Ares's insanity had no limits, that his overweening ambition knew no bounds. What do you think he was planning for Kratos? Why give his mortal subject near Olympian strength and toughness? Why would he affix the blades of Chaos to Kratos's wrists? Chaos, the primordial realm, conquered and brought to order by your grandfather, Uranus. She drew herself up to her full height and turned to her father. Kratos was always meant to be the weapon that killed a god. This truth names the coldest dread my heart has ever known. The god that was to be Kratos's victim was you, father. Ares was grooming Kratos for the same task I am, and for the same reason, to slay a god, but to avoid Gaia's immortal curse on any who shed their family's blood. Father, you must help Kratos. He is not the true hope of Athens. He is the hope of Olympus itself. My lord father, I have seen this future in my darkest nightmares. If Kratos falls, so falls Olympus. Breathless and nearly in tears, the goddess of foresight and clever stratagems had left to her only truth and love.
Father, please.
My edict stands. One god may not kill another.
Athena had nothing to say.
Kratos may reach the arena of remembrance and face his final challenge. But that will not be the end.
Zeus looked grim, his beard crashing with lightning amid the thunderheads.
That, my beloved daughter, will be the beginning. Until then he has much to conquer, not the least challenge being his own nature. If he does, then I might find him worthy.
Worthy of what, my father? Zeus did not answer. 19. The tunnel through the living rock wound about with sudden right-angle turns and eventually opened onto the face of a cliff. Kratos looked up and saw the overhang was such that he had to find ledges and handholds to cross an expanse of rock before going upward. A quick glance convinced him that nothing but death awaited him below. He wiped his hands against his thighs once more to remove the last vestige of blood. The wounds he sustained had now clotted over, and more. The deaths of his opponents had renewed his own energy and accelerated healing once again. Since that day when Ares had answered his prayer before the barbarian king, it had been thus. Wounds healed quickly, but the aftermath always wore on him, because while his body was whole, his spirit never was.
"Show no mercy," he ordered his warriors as they entered the vile village. A shrine devoted to Athena stood at the far end, a shrine that mocked Lord Ares and angered Kratos. Whatever angered the god of war angered his servant. Kratos was the first to light a torch and throw it onto a thatched roof. The flames burned brightly in the night, but were a guttering candle flame to the anger and bloodlust that boiled within him. The entire village was an affront. "Kill them all!" he shouted, then set to using the blades of chaos to show his men the proper way of slaying. From one end of the village to the other he killed without hesitation. The blades swung in a pattern, a deadly arc that ended the lives of those trying to fight with him with scythes and forge hammers, and those who did nothing but beg for his mercy. Kratos knew no mercy, and he would show no mercy to the old woman hobbling from the shrine. He shoved her aside. Those within would die by his sword.
"Beware, Kratos," she called in her cracked ancient voice. "The dangers in the temple are greater than you know."
He laughed harshly. He was Kratos and feared no one, no thing, especially not the feeble thrusts and blows from the acolytes within. His mighty blades of chaos began swinging, slicing, slashing, and killing until he saw nothing but a red veil of their spilled blood. And then there were two more bodies on the floor at his feet, fresh victims of his bloodlust. Kratos stared at them and screamed. Ares's callous voice filled the temple.
"You're becoming all I hoped you'd be, Spartan."
Anger filled him anew at how Ares had used him so vilely. Kratos took a deep breath and forced back the dark tide threatening to drown him. The visions would be his legacy forever, unless he did as Athena had commanded. The gods would erase his nightmares, his memory, and again he could live in peace with himself. All he needed to do was cross the sheer face of the rocky cliff. He stepped out, shoved a sandaled foot into a small crevice, and reached widely for a handhold he spotted barely within reach. His fingertips clamped on the narrow outjut of stone, allowing him to move his other foot and continue across the cliff face. Many times he had scaled mountains to outflank an enemy, so this was not a new challenge for him.
"By the gods, no!"
The words escaped his lips when he saw a bulge of stone ahead begin to swell and take shape. The stone exploded outward as a man-sized, scorpion-tailed creature flowed from the very rock to block his way. Drawing the blades of chaos required stability he did not have. He jumped, caught at new hand and footholds, and grabbed for the scorpion thing. Its tail whipped about, but Kratos had a firm grip on its throat, and turned its body so that the deadly tail flicked past him harmlessly. He grunted, focusing all his strength on crushing the monster's armored windpipe. Chitin cracked. The scorpion thing thrashed about wildly, its tail even more menacing now. Kratos jerked away as the tail sang through the air, aimed for his eyes. A droplet of poison that had beaded on the tip of the stinger splashed his forehead and burned like fire. His grip on the creature weakened as the poison trickled down into his eyebrow, searing the hair and threatening to run into his eye. Kratos swiped his arm against the poison drop to prevent it from blinding him, but his arm was coated with gore. Blood got into his eye and turned him blind. As he had experienced in battle, the blood dropped a Stygian dark veil across his vision. He blinked furiously to clear it. Blood in his eye was better than permanently blinding poison, but the distinction quickly vanished when he heard talons scraping on the rock below him. The scorpion monster had fallen a few feet when he released it, but was now returning to kill him. and he could not see it. He squeezed his eyes shut so hard they turned painful. Then he remembered the two bodies in Athena's shrine. Anger and tears exploded within, and his vision was crystalline again. The rock scorpion was only a few feet away and approaching, its tail with the poison-laden stinger readied for a killing blow. Kratos made a wild grab, caught the creature by the neck again, and wrenched hard. The tail drove around in an arc over the creature's head, into the rock, missing Kratos by inches. With another loud shout to focus his strength and rage, Kratos brought his fingers together, completely smashing the rock-dwelling monster's throat. He held it suspended now, away from the rock, and did not have to see clearly to finish it off. It twitched feebly, then all life fled. He dropped it, watching the body rebound repeatedly from the rock face before disappearing far below. Kratos wiped the gore from his hand and continued traversing the cliff, blinking hard and recovering his vision. He had gone only a few yards, not even reaching the spot where he might scale the cliff and go straight to the top, when new scraping sounds alerted him to other scorpion things popping from the very rock.
"Athena, you ask much of me," he said, trying to speed along the path he had scouted across the stone face.
Kratos had barely reached the point where he might climb directly upward when two more of the monsters overtook him, scuttling across the vertical rock as if it were level ground. Kratos found a ledge and positioned both feet on it. Still hanging on a secure handhold, he wrenched a rock free with his right hand and flung it with all his might. The missile sailed true. The nearest scorpion reacted instinctively and lashed out with its curved, deadly tail. This was all the opening Kratos needed to hurl a second rock, which accurately struck the creature in the middle of its head. The tail flew to fend off this new attack, and the scorpion monster stung itself. Not waiting for the dying creature to fall from the cliff, Kratos threw a third stone, dislodging it. Now he faced only the one. This monster arched its back and showered stony splinters in all directions. Kratos protected his face against the calcified needles and futilely sought another rock. None was to be had. He looked up, charted his way to the top of the cliff, and started climbing, the scorpion directly under him and scuttling along faster than he could hope to scale such featureless rock. Just feet from the top of the cliff, Kratos released his grip and fell. He crashed into the scorpion at a spot where all eight of the monster's legs were occupied with simply hanging on. With a twist, Kratos came about and caught the stinger as it arched out and upward to slice and poison him. A tiny drop of yellowish venom dripped from the tail. His weight was being supported entirely by the huge scorpion, and his drop onto its head had stunned the creature so much that its legs came free one by one. Kratos held on to the thrashing tail until he was certain the scorpion thing could not maintain its grip an instant longer. With a vicious twist, he wrenched at the tail and dislodged the monster. At the same instant, he kicked hard against the face of the cliff and sought a handhold. The scorpion thing followed its companions to the distant ground, and Kratos hung by the fingertips of one hand on a small, dusty ledge. Bit by bit, his fingers slid off. He looked down, not to see where he would fall, but to find footholds. Unable to locate any, he kicked as powerfully as he could. Pain lanced up his leg, but his toes chipped away enough of a hole for him to support his weight. His fingers fell away from the ledge, but his feet supported him as he sagged down. He stood in his hard-won footholds, then made his way across and upward to reach the top of the cliff. Once there, Kratos dropped to his knees and gave a silent prayer to the gods, though what aid he had received from them was a mystery. He had survived through his own effort and would continue to do so. From ahead, through an open portal in the side of the mountain, came crashing sounds, machines running, a rumbling noise that he could not identify. Drawing the blades of chaos, he approached the portal and advanced down its tunnel. He stopped beside a conveyor belt that disappeared under a rocky ledge. Kratos swung his blades against the stone, but even the potent magic locked in their metal could not dislodge a pebble. He turned and looked against the direction of the rapidly running conveyor belt and saw what had produced the crashing noise. Huge blocks studded with long spikes collided repeatedly. The only way to advance was to run against the direction of the conveyor belt and pass the rhythmically opening and closing jaws. Kratos returned the blades to their resting spots on his back, gauged the action of the deadly jaws, and jumped onto the conveyor belt. He misjudged the speed and was carried along with it to smash into the rock wall. He screamed in pain and recoiled. While the face of the wall appeared to be ordinary stone, the merest touch drove lances of white-hot pain into his body. Kratos began running, until he cancelled the speed of the belt under him and remained in place. Then he exerted more effort and gained against the conveyor belt, coming to the first set of jaws smashing together. Beyond lay several more sets. Once committed to this venture, he had no choice but to plunge ahead, never faltering. The slightest mistake would bring him between those spiked panels, impaling him. If he sank back to the conveyor belt, he would be swept into the wall and receive torture that burned at the very core of his being. With such incentive, he put on a burst of speed and successfully raced past the first set of jaws. The Scylla and Charybdis of his passage forced him to concentrate fully on avoiding the crushing jaws and sharp teeth. Only once, as he raced forward, checked speed to run in place, and then burst ahead as the jaws opened, did he receive any injury. The final gateway did not operate on a pattern, but was inspired by chaos. Kratos turned as a slender knife drove through his biceps, holding him in place. Realizing the danger of being restrained, he jerked savagely and left behind a gobbet of bloody muscle so he could race along the conveyor belt toward a stone ledge where he could step off safely. Rather than diminished sounds of machinery, Kratos heard more ahead, along a tunnel opening into a room that convinced him the architect had been driven mad by the gods. Deep double grooves formed a field of squares. Rolling endlessly in those grooves were double-bladed wheels, their edges gleaming knives so sharp that Kratos had to squint as they raced by. To one side of the room an iron gate blocked the way out, but he saw the key to opening it. A lever protruded from the center of one square. Throw it, and the gate would rise. But to get to it would require even more timing and daring than avoiding the slamming jaws along the conveyor belt. The knife wheels never stopped, never rested, would slice him to ribbons if he committed a single misstep. With a powerful jump, he vaulted over one wheel and landed safely in the middle of a square. He stood erect as knife wheels raced past him on one side and behind. Kratos judged the periodicity of the wheel in front of him and stepped out just as it passed, achieving a square closer to the lever. Only then did he know